Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be joined next hour by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans and the Nashville Predators with him. Darren McFarland drops by at 9 o'clock, and our buddy Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us later this hour at 7:30 to get into the latest with the Tennessee Vols. And Joe, we'll get into Tennessee's latest loss over the weekend coming up in here in just a few minutes. But starting with a big win for Vanderbilt basketball on Saturday against Kermit Davis and the Ole Miss Rebels. Vanderbilt gets a 75-70 win in a game where they were shorthanded, like we talked about heading into the weekend. A really impressive performance for Vanderbilt. A tough blow for Ole Miss and their chances to make the NCAA tournament. But I thought, you know, as soon as you count this Vanderbilt basketball team out, they've had a couple of pretty impressive performances back-to-back in a loss against Tennessee and then a big win over the weekend against Ole Miss.
First of all, we have not celebrated enough. It's March 1st, everyone.
Yes.
Everyone, be excited. As unexcited as I am about 17 years in the NFL, I'm just that excited about the arrival of March, one of the great months in the sports calendar. And, yeah, the Vanderbilt. So, I'm glad you brought that up. I want you to help me out with something, Robbie.
Okay.
Be honest with me. You know,
is this about you making everybody mad over the weekend again?
It is. And it's, you know, this tweet, which has been misunderstood by so many people, including Chad Withrow. And it's like, dude, like, so let me just show you the tweet. Here's my tweet. Now I want you to tell me, was this a bad tweet? It may have been. I mean, look, when this many people screw it up, then it's like, okay, maybe you screwed it up. Okay. Here's my tweet. Because, and again, I think Rick Barnes and the Vols, like, that better be rock bottom, the way they played Saturday, the way they played last week. I mean,
it's pretty bad.
If Pippen and Dessou are playing, do they win that game? I don't think they do.
No.
They're bad right now. Meanwhile, it's absolutely incredible to me because I know how good of a coach Kermit Davis is. He is a really good coach. He's got Ole Miss rolling. They are pushing for an NCAA bid. I mean, that team is playing for everything right now. And for Vanderbilt to win that game with no Pippen, with no Dessou, who's out for the season, Pippen should be back this week, to me is astounding. I mean, that's an incredible coaching day. So here's my tweet. Tennessee, okay, I wrote Tennessee column posting in a minute, but here's a question. When's the last day the coaching of a Vanderbilt team was this much better than the coaching of a Tennessee team? Tyndall era, I must assume. The last day, okay? So, like, Withrow is as an example, because there's a lot of fans, but he said his tweet is, Vanderbilt's mired in maybe the worst three-season stretch in Power 5 history and just got swept by the Vols. Tennessee has no identity because of veterans have struggled. Propping up Stackhouse because of one arbitrary day is ridiculous. That's, like, that tweet makes my point. I understand where the programs are. It's talking about the arbitrary day. It's just a weird day. That's why I tweet it. But I want you to tell me, Robbie, when you if you read that tweet or hear or whatever, did you understand what I meant, or was I not clear enough?
I mean, I knew what you were talking about, but you're asking for, like, you know, logical responses on Twitter. And that ship sailed long ago, my friend.
Well, but Withrow could – come on.
I understand.
Figure this out.
He can. But I knew that when you tweeted it, Tennessee fans would get mad.
I mean, I had a lot of discussions. And
I'm sure
the
you
mentions.
Did.
Like, dude, I'm not saying Stackhouse is better than Rick Barnes. I'm not saying Vanderbilt's better than Tennessee. I'm saying, when's the last weird day? And the reason it's such a weird day is because of what Withrow said.
Duh. Doesn't happen very often.
Right. Like, they're in totally different places as programs. But, okay. Well, so, I mean, are you just being kind to me?
No.
I'm, you know, yeah.
You Maybe it's just because I know you. But I knew what you were going for.
Well, you still got to be clear, though. So I'll try to be more clear in the future. But, yes, it's a crazy day.
Wouldn't be a weekend without Joe Rexroad making people mad on Twitter.
Yes.
That's Vandy what we've learned. Joe.
I'm a Vandy shill per Vol Twitter now again. So I hate your team. But, look, I mean, I wrote a column about Rick Barnes Saturday because I looked at that team. And, you know, after the game, look, Rick Barnes is – we'll have some quotes from him. He says what he thinks about his players, and I think that's just fine. And he's puzzled, and I get it. And that happens too. But, man, we're at the point where, like, you get paid this much money also to be a psychologist, also to be a motivator, also to figure these things out. And this team, I can't recall ever a Rick Barnes team, and someone may say, no, Providence 1988 or whatever, but I cannot recall a Rick Barnes team that gets progressively worse through a season. I can't remember it.
No.
It's stunning to me.
Yeah, they were bad on Saturday. A 77-72 loss against a shorthanded Auburn team that, quite frankly, is not very good this year anyway. I mean, it was bad. It's sad, but I kind of saw it coming. Like, this has been trending this way for Tennessee. And to your point, I mean, they just look so lost out there. In the first half, they're turning the ball over left and right. I mean, that's been a huge problem for them over the course of the last couple weeks, is the turnovers and just the stupid decisions that they're making with the ball in their hand. And Rick Barnes talked about the first half and just how frustrating that was for Tennessee in their loss against Auburn on Saturday. Here's what Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes had to say.
Rick, how frustrating was the first half with turnovers and allowing so many offensive rebounds, and then the free throw discrepancy? I mean, how do you try to get your guys to get to the line more, especially post players?
Well, you got to be aggressive to do that. And obviously, first, I mean, you just said the game plan: get back, rebound the ball. And we talked about it. We had rebounds at times. We got stripped with it. And the fact of the matter is, you can get fouled in the post if you work hard and try to fight for your space on the court, as opposed to just letting people shove you around. And then you get the ball. I think John had four turnovers today. He shouldn't be turning the ball over four times. He should. Josiah had a bad turnover. It's the bad turnovers you got to eliminate. But I go back to that being locked in, understanding that every possession matters, and competing like every possession matters on both ends. Not when you're making shots and feeling good, but when things aren't going well, can you continue to compete and put yourself in position? I think it was a great – I told Keon there when he came down that last three. That's where, again, we talked to him a lot about it. That's where he should have gone to the rim, and we could have made it a one possession game right there. But you could just go back. Little things that the freshmen are being put in some positions that honestly they shouldn't have to be. If our older, more experienced guys would do more, just do a little bit more. Not a whole lot, just a little bit more, and not put so much pressure on those guys to feel like they have to do everything.
So that was Rick Barnes after the game on Saturday against Auburn. And Joe, I've got a couple of reactions to that. Number one, I mean, the early part of that answer by Rick Barnes talking about, you know, getting to the line more and being more aggressive, I almost feel like at this point with this team, that's living in fantasy land, that you think they're all of a sudden going to turn it on and get to the free throw line. That's just not been the way for the most part that they've operated all season long. So I guess I'm just an I'll believe it when I see it mode at this point, that this team is all of a sudden going to become more aggressive and start to get to the free throw line on a more regular basis. But to the second point of the freshmen, I mean, they had some turnovers as well, but Keon Johnson, 23 points, Jaden Springer, 20 points on Saturday against Auburn. Outside of those two, not much happening offensively, and to Rick Barnes' point, probably being put in situations as freshmen, especially with the talent and the experience that this Tennessee team has, that I would not have anticipated heading into the season. Like, we know how talented those two are, but with the veteran pieces that are around them, they should not have to do as much as they're having to do right now for this team to hang in games.
No, and I actually even asked about, what about Keon Johnson more on the block? Because that's another thing Rick said in the post game was, you know, you have to have a post-up option, and he's always had that. And obviously, you know, the best example was Grant Williams, who was the ultimate, throw the ball in, something good's going to happen. Whenever you needed something in a game, you know. Now, you're not always going to have Grant Williams on the block, but they thought they'd have Fulkerson this year to, again, if Fulkerson is what he was the first 12 games of this year, he doesn't need to be the 18 points a game guy of last year when he had that 10-game tear. He needs to be the 10 to 12 guy who makes good decisions, who isn't weak with the ball and gets it ripped out of his hands, and who just makes, you know, just plays like he can play. He doesn't have to do anything extraordinary. But that guy has disappeared. And so that's why I asked about, like, what about Keon Johnson on the block? But, again, that's adding more to his plate. Like, they've got to do something. And if they have to invert their offense, I mean, they went so small the other day. At one point, they had Pons, And they had James off the floor. So they had Pons at the five, but they had, like, I guess it was Keon at the four. Like, he's trying different things and trending small. But yes, you're right. The freshmen, I mean, they're scoring more than 50% of this team's points right now. And I think they're probably going to have to do that moving forward. They're going to have to play well. Those guys can get where they want. Those guys can get to the rim, to the line, give them more opportunities. But some of these role players have to also chip in and not turn it over. I mean, Victor Bailey's been hot lately, right? But, I mean, I just feel like Vescovi can give more. Fulkerson obviously can give more. I think Josiah James may be a key here this month.
Yeah.
He's been banged up. He's a really good player. He really is. He just – sometimes he passes – like the other day, he passed up a wide-open shot, and it's like you have to take that. Then he took an early – not open three, you know, and it's like, no, but that's not the one. It's like a lot of these guys are just, they're afraid to make mistakes, and they're just not playing. They're playing very robotically, and they're not just playing basketball. That's the guy though, who to me can put the ball on the floor, is a really good passer, and certainly a key defensively. If he can get going, be healthier, I think that could be one of the things that could get this team turned around.
And that's six straight wins for Auburn against Tennessee. This coaching matchup between Bruce Pearl and Rick Barnes has not gone well for Rick Barnes as of late, which I know Tennessee fans just love it to see Bruce Pearl on the other sideline kicking their butt.
Oh, my goodness. And all the – I mean, I said – because I joked about it the other day because I was like, they're not going to lose to Auburn. But it's like immediately you get the, you know, Bruce Pearl's way better than Rick Barnes, blah, blah, blah. Never should have fired him, all that stuff. But it's amazing that he won. Listen, Auburn has some talented guys. I mean, Bruce Pearl always has talent. But Sharif Cooper is a 20.8 assist guy.
Yeah.
And they were bad with him. Okay? You sit him down, you cannot lose to that team. It's a terrible loss. And, again, I mean, Tennessee's 0-2 last week if they don't get massive help on the injury front from their opponents, which is that's – hard to believe they have gotten to this point, and here we are in March.
So do they have enough time left to dig out of it? We'll discuss that when we come back and also get into Rick Barnes as well. I've got some thoughts on this team that, quite frankly, looks very poorly coached at the moment. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit as well. But right now I got to tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. And one of the things I love about betting on basketball is I'm always finding new player props or game props that I like. And what's cool about FanDuel Sportsbook is you can combine these props with other bets from the same game to score an even bigger payout. And it's called a same game parlay bet that you can only find on FanDuel. You can combine the money line, the point spread, the first basket score, player assist, any way you want to take it, you can do it in the same game. And right now, new and existing users can get up to $25 in site credit back each day if your parlay falls one leg short with same game parlay insurance. You heard that right? Every single day. That's why I bet on FanDuel. It's so easy to use. They get you your money in as little as 24 hours. So just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today to try a same game parlay and use promo code ROB at signup. That promo code is ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund of $25. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Rob. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Tennessee Vols and their basketball team. Another very disappointing loss for the Vols over the weekend, coming at the hands of the Auburn Tigers, 77-72. And we're going to have Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville join us at 7:30. So we'll get into the nitty-gritty with the Vols with him as well. Looking forward to that conversation. But, Joe, honestly, like I watched this team right now, and with some of the post-game comments that we've heard from Rick Barnes, right now this just looks like a poorly coached team. And I said it last week, like you're going to hear some noise on Rick Barnes from some Tennessee fans about how he can't win the big games and maybe they need to consider moving on and trying to get somebody else in here. I saw that even more over the weekend with some Tennessee fans on Twitter, and I understand the frustration. I said it last week, and I still believe this, like – I think some perspective is needed here, and you need to recognize what the Tennessee basketball program is, what the Tennessee basketball program has been, and I think still overall the really good job that Rick Barnes has done up until this point. But I think that can be true while also recognizing that the last couple of weeks especially, this team I think is unquestionably trending in the wrong direction. And, you know, I'm cool with coaches, you know, calling out players in postgame press conferences. Quite frankly, I think it needs to happen probably more often than it does. But I think if you're a Tennessee fan and you hear about the, you know, the problems with Fulkerson and not being aggressive enough and not being motivated enough to go out there and play and have that competitive fire that Rick Barnes has talked about, well, a lot of that's on the coaching too. Like, that's your job. Your job is to get your team ready. And right now, this Tennessee team just doesn't look ready to play.
Exactly. I mean, it's – and, you know, again, it's getting worse. I mean, first of all, Robbie, like, there should not be – you know, Twitter fights happen. But how is it that on the same weekend I'm having Twitter fights with Vols fans like, no, I'm not saying that Vanderbilt and Stackhouse are better than Tennessee and Barnes, and then also having fights with Vols fans who are like, fire Rick Barnes. Like, how could you have both of those fights the same weekend?
You're very talented on Twitter.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, it's just like people are all over the place, and that's just going way too far. And the thing is, here's something I heard too, which is, oh, well, here's Rick Barnes showing his true colors. I'm like, listen, the whole like one Final Four run and all that talent, that's fair. Okay. That's the knock on Rick Barnes. The knock on Rick Barnes is not that his teams get worse during the year, not at all. I mean, this is not a normal, oh, here we go again with Rick Barnes. No, that's what's weird about this. And look, I think a lot of coaches, if we polled all the coaches of any sport right now and said, okay, how much harder is your job in the last year than in a given year? And they'd probably say about 1,000,000%. And I understand that, okay? But the fact is, everyone's dealing with the same thing right now. And so we're not going to stop evaluating coaches, obviously. I mean, SEC football made that clear for us.
Yeah.
You know, no one's taking a pandemic break from, you know, from firing coaches or getting mad at coaches if teams don't perform well. Rick Barnes being fired or on any hot seat, it's completely idiotic. I mean, have a little bit of perspective on what this program is and has been. He's one of the greatest coaches it's ever had. This program's never been to the Final Four. So let's get real. Also, he's not doing a good job this year. And at this point, like, if he doesn't figure something out soon, like, I don't know if this team wins another game. I mean, they got Florida coming in this weekend, and they get – this is a huge week for the Vols, figure yeah. stuff out. But you got Florida coming in, and, you know, the SEC tournament, that could – and then, you know, who knows? What are they going to be? Are they going to be a 6-7 now? I mean, it's really disappointing. It's a massively disappointing team. And if there's one thing beyond, like, motivating these guys or figuring out what's going on, I look at his big man recruiting, and I say, my goodness, we made such a big deal out of Juroš Plavšić a year ago. He can't get on the floor. You know, Drew Pember, maybe someday. Olivier Nkamwaz is a guy who can give you a little bit. Anasicki has totally faded. I mean, Fulkerson's struggling like this, and he doesn't have another guy to throw in there, even though he's brought a whole bunch of them in. Like, why is the selection / development of these big guys not working? Because right now, that would be a big help.
Yeah, I mean, it would. I mean, they have almost no presence in the post right now. It's a huge problem. And, you know, based on some of the comments that he's had and just the way that things are happening out there on the court right now on a game-by-game basis, it just appears that there is a disconnect right now between Rick Barnes and his players. And Rick Barnes talked about that after the game on Saturday against Auburn and how to go about addressing that as they move forward here. Here's what Tennessee coach Rick Barnes had to say.
Rick, where's the disconnect between you and your staff and these players in terms of talking about stuff over and over and still not being able to execute it at this point?
Well, you know what? I think that confidence has something to do with that. I think that fear has something to do with it. I think there's some guys that are looking around and had high expectations of themselves and thinking, hey, it's not going the way that I wanted it to go. And they're not totally locked in. And now, understanding that some roles have changed. You know, the way we thought we would be playing early in the year, we're not playing that way now because of production. So the disconnect is where guys are able to get out of their own way and listen to what's going on in the game and understand that they have a role to play. If we would just simply do that, get guys to play their role the way they should play it, we would be okay. If we could just do that. The guys that are supposed to, you know, make plays, take care of the ball, take care of the guys that should be turning the ball over at, you know, at an alarming rate, they should be doing it. And so you ask the question, why are they doing it? And as much time as we spend talking about it, at some point in time, you got to stop talking about it. It just gets down to, again, a competitive spirit and a competitive fire.
That was Rick Barnes after the game on Saturday. And Joe, like to your point, I hear what he says there and talking about the roles being a little bit different now than maybe they anticipated coming into the season. And if people would just play the role that they're asking them to play, Tennessee would figure this out. But my question is, like, it seemed like they were doing that to begin the season. Why has that all of a sudden gone the complete opposite direction? To the point where now, Joe, like, I look at this team, I don't know what their roles are. Like, other than Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, like, I don't know what we have clearly identified roles for this team based on just how disorganized they look out there.
Yeah, well, I agree with them being disorganized. You know, I mean, I think the roles are, I mean, I think we're headed toward clearly, like, they've got to get those two guys who they're going to be saying goodbye to in a few weeks. Hey, good luck in the NBA, guys. Enjoy being picked in the first round. They got to feature them. They've got to get everything out of them that they can. And I think those guys, hey, the way they're competing and playing, I mean, hey, they're up for it, man. They're up for it. So that's, I mean, start there. I think the other roles are defined. I just don't think they're being fulfilled well. I mean, look, Vescovi, get the ball to other people and hit spot up jumpers. You know, you got to be able to hit some threes. Bailey, you're a shooter. You got to get him shots. I mean, I think the guy that I think can kind of tie a lot of stuff together if he gets back to playing his best ball is Josiah James. I really think that's the guy to watch moving forward. And Fulkerson knows his role. He just can't do it. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he knows what he's supposed to do. They know what they want to do. They want to get him the ball in the post when they're in a half court set so that they can have something to build around, and it's just not working. He's just, I don't know what is going on with him. It's, again, he's getting to the line about five times a game in the first 12 games, and it's down to, like, you know, less than one a game now. He's not driving, attacking. Is there a physical ailment? I don't know. But that's the guy, too. I just don't know if that's going to happen. Now, if that happens and Josiah James gets going, and then we haven't talked about Eve Pons, but terrifically important player on defense. Offensively, man, like, teams are like, please stand in that corner and take threes.
Right.
You can even hit one or two. Fine. Do that. Please. Sit there and shoot jumpers. We love that. Thank you, Eve. I mean, if he decides to go, and I don't care, get a couple charges. Hurt someone. Knock them over. This team's so much better when he decides to attack. And he just doesn't do it enough. And that's one of those things that, like, I mean, this is where there are limitations for coaches. Like, you can say the same stuff over. I mean, you know, he's saying a lot of these things to these guys. He gets it. It doesn't mean it's, you know, that it's necessarily going to happen, that they're going to do it. So some of it is still on them.
Joe, we talked about after the Kansas game, maybe this team being on track to be a 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. I mean, I think it's safe to say at this point that's not going to happen. Where do you think this team is going to end up in terms of the seeding if things continue the way they're going right now?
Yeah, well, you know, they're probably – here's the thing. Actually, if they're not going to be a 3, then it would actually be probably better for them to drop below the 4-5.
Yeah, probably so.
Although, you know, again, like, to me, getting to the Sweet 16 at this point would be a massive achievement for this team. It's just not trending that way. Now, I've seen many instances of, you know, teams that are not hot, are not playing well, that totally get revived in the NCAA tournament. So it's not like that doesn't, it's not like every year the teams that play well in the tournament are the teams that are rolling. Sometimes it's the opposite. A team that's rolling gets shocked early. And, you know, so the tournament just starts everything over. So that's something to keep in mind. I mean, right now, like, Lunardi has Tennessee as a 5 still. You know, so, I mean, that's it. But if you're 5, of course, that means that you're lined up to play the 1 in the Sweet 16. I think this year is a year where there's a clear top tier and a pretty big gap. And I think that top tier is Gonzaga, Michigan, and Baylor, even though Baylor lost to Kansas, you know, on the road the other night, first loss. That's still, to me, the top tier. So if you're a six, you would not have to play that one till the Elite Eight. But, I mean, that sounds like fantasy talk anyway. Like, can you win a game? I mean, Lenardi has Tennessee against Western Kentucky in a 5-12. Can you win that game?
Yeah.
I'm not feeling great about it right now.
When we come back, we'll continue this discussion on the Tennessee Volunteers. Our man Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the Tennessee Volunteers and their basketball team. Another disappointing loss over the weekend. And to help us do that, we welcome into our show Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville, our good friend who joins us every week. Josh, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you guys.
Good to have you with us. And Josh, let's start specifically with the game on Saturday for Tennessee against Auburn. What stood out to you in that game? Obviously, another very disappointing finish for Tennessee.
Yeah, a lot of the same issues with Tennessee's offense. And we've had a lot of the same conversation over the last few weeks in that they haven't been able to get anything going consistently on that side of the floor. And the defense has still been good enough. It actually had some issues against Auburn that Auburn was able to take advantage of. But a lot of this comes back to the veterans, and they just haven't been able to perform at a high enough level. And Tennessee's coaches have not been able to figure out how to fix it and to get things going. And a lot of that conversation has been around John Fulkerson, of course. But, you know, with what they're doing in the offense, have they done enough to help John Fulkerson? I'm not sure that that's the case. The results say no. And it's put a lot of pressure on Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, who have done a good job, but they can only do so much. And when you come out of the game and the freshmen are meeting with the media and they're talking about effort, and that can come back to the veterans. And Rick Barnes was saying the veterans aren't doing enough. Here we are having this conversation after a really embarrassing loss to Auburn.
Yeah, and I'll say this for Fulkerson, Josh. And this happens when a player sort of fades and isn't playing well. There were at least two or three times Saturday where he got deep position. There was a clear entry pass to make to him, and his teammates didn't look at him, didn't give him the ball. And I think that's also reflective of a team that has lost confidence in him along with his own situation. But, like, you got to give him some of those opportunities. Like, it just seems like there's so many – simple decisions and correct decisions that aren't being made on offense that are making it even harder, let alone just the overall thing of please stop just settling for jump shots. But aside from Fulkerson, Josh, like, where would you start to fix that side of the ball?
Well, yeah. And Joe, you said something interesting there, the word confidence, because I think we often think about confidence that a player has in himself. And I think that's an issue here for a number of these players, probably John Fulkerson included. But I also wonder how much confidence the players have in their teammates when they see shots that aren't falling, or if John Fulkerson's not getting the basketball, perhaps that's because one of his teammates says, well, why am I going to throw it in there if it's going to result in a missed fadeaway 12-foot jump shot or, you know, something like that. And I think that's part of it, is that go back to the first Missouri game. My thought at the time was, well, this team hasn't even really started to put together what it's going to be able to do. And it actually ended up going the opposite direction, where it lost any kind of identity of what it needs to be on the offensive floor. And that is, as the freshmen, the star freshmen, were able to continue to grow and play bigger roles within the offense. So I think the conversation has to start with the mental side. They need to figure out some way to regain trust and confidence in one another. They need to figure out some different things to do offensively to get some of those guys going. As Rick Barnes has said, it's non-existent, the post scoring. And I wonder where the coach's confidence level is. And then lineup construction, that can kind of confuse me from game to game and throughout the game. And Olivier Kumwa is a player that I actually have thought, he's not going to go out there and score 12 to 15 points for you, but can actually give quality minutes. And we see it early in a game and then maybe don't see him again. So figuring out what their best lineup is, how much John Fulkerson should play, I think that's a big part of it. But there's a big mental conversation here of trying to get over whatever is going on internally within the program.
And Josh, speaking of that mental conversation, like we've talked a lot here on the show about obviously Fulkerson, but really the team as a whole just not being aggressive and driving to the basket. It's not like they don't have players that can do it. I mean, I watch Eve Pons when he does decide to do it and drive to the hole. I mean, the guy is borderline unstoppable when he decides to do that. Why do you think this team doesn't do that more and drives the ball to the hole and tries to take matters into their own hands that way and starts instead of settling for the jump shots that this team seems to settle for way too often?
Yeah, it's a good question because I think Eve Pons, I think Josiah Jordan James are two guys that we should see at the free throw line a lot with their size and physical ability and athleticism. That should be an advantage, but it just hasn't been there. This offense does seem to lack the creator among the ball handlers that I thought would be there as well. I thought the fact that you had a number of guys that could probably make plays with the ball in their hands, but it's been often more trying to make a play for himself. And we've seen games where actually you look at the assist rate and it's really high and you come out of it saying, okay, maybe that's what this team can be offensively, but we just haven't had that conversation often enough. And obviously shots have to fall for you to get an assist. It's not there with Santiago Vescovi, like I think coaches probably thought that it would be. It hasn't been there consistently enough with Victor Bailey Jr., who recently has shot the ball better. But if we're having the conversation of being able to create opportunities for their teammates, it just hasn't been there. And now that we're in March, trying to find it is really difficult and probably unlikely. But that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to figure out who can make plays. And part of the issue is you might come out of the game saying Santiago Vescovi had a really good night. And then you don't say it for the next two games and keep going. And with Josiah, I'll point out he's had the wrist injury and that's probably affecting his shooting because he's not shooting well. At least that's my guess. But it's still part of an issue. But getting to the free throw line is something that I thought this team would be able to do a lot. And it wasn't there on Saturday. Auburn was the one that was getting to the free throw line. Auburn was the team that looked like it wanted it more. It looked like it was a team playing to move back up with NCAA tournament seeding, not Tennessee. So that is really concerning. That comes back to the off-the-court conversation that needs to be had, needs to be figured out very quickly. And they do have a week. They get this week off before playing Florida, and they need to take advantage of it.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you hit on the guy I feel like is very important there, Josiah James. I think he's a guy who can tie a lot of things together if he's playing his best as a role player. But, those freshmen, they are the stars. So it's going to be really interesting to see, what Rick can get done this week. Josh, I wanted to ask you about two other Tennessee teams here, one of which is Kelly Harper's team, which, Renia Davis, just a great player, had a great senior day, totally saved Tennessee at Missouri on Thursday. What do you think the ceiling is? This is the highest they've been in the SEC tournament since 2015, number three seed. Still clearly Texas A&M, South Carolina are better, but what do you think that team could do? And then football, I've got to ask, because Sam Horn was sort of the Vols will get Sam Horn if they don't get Ty Simpson, and Sam Horn commits to Missouri. So what's the excitement level for one of those teams and the concern level early on the recruiting trail for the Vols football team?
Yeah, because those are separate conversations for sure. I think the move we've seen the Lady Vols make this season, where they were playing well against good teams, they played well against UConn, against Texas A&M, but they were coming up short in some of these games. And that win against South Carolina really had to change how this team viewed itself. And Kelly Harper challenged the team in the middle of the game. Renia Davis responded in that game. And they came back and lost the next one against Georgia, but it was close, and that's a quality team. This is a program that, to this point, has moved in the right direction. And expecting Kelly Harper 2 years in to have Tennessee as a program where South Carolina is, as South Carolina has set the bar more recently within the SEC, that would have been unfair. But I think to this point, this team has shown a good level of toughness, mental toughness, and let's see what it can do in the postseason. But I would say that Kelly Harper is either on the path that should have been expected or maybe ahead of what the expectation should have been, considering they had a weird offseason in between year one and year two. So overall, I've been impressed. The expectations will continue to rise, of course. But to me, I think Kelly Harper's done a really nice job so far with what she inherited at Tennessee on the football side. Yeah, it's just, I think in the last two or three days, the Ty Simpson announcement, which was not a surprise. He was expected to choose Alabama. But once that became public, I think that and then Sam Horn's announcement are just a couple of reminders of where Tennessee football is right now, how it is viewed by prospects. I think a lot of prospects look at Tennessee and say, it's a really nice program and they have really good resources. But so does this school. And obviously comparing Tennessee to Alabama is going to be a no-brainer to an outsider. But I think a lot of people outside the Tennessee circle would say, you know, Missouri's in pretty good shape. Missouri's a good program. I think more recruits see that than we would have said 5 years ago or certainly 10 years ago. So that's just something that Josh Heupel is going to have to overcome. What helps at the quarterback position is you have some talent on campus, but you want to get the guys that you want. And Taven Jackson's a guy that word came out on Sunday that they offered him. So the staff had an idea that it's not going to work out with Sam Horn. But I think the last few days have offered another reminder, another wake-up call of where Tennessee is and what kind of rebuilding effort Josh Heupel has inherited at Tennessee. And everything he's doing is great, I think, in terms of the Zoom calls and all that stuff to try to help build Tennessee's brand. But other coaches at other schools do that, and those schools have had better results recently. And it's going to take a lot of time for Josh Heupel to find better results to then go pitch recruits that are trying to consider Tennessee and all these other SEC schools.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Josh Ward joins us every week here on Robbie and Rexro. No shortage of things to talk about ever with the Tennessee Volunteers, and things not going very well right now at all for on the basketball front of things. So we'll continue that discussion on the other side. And also, it's March. Where does March Madness rank for you in terms of the best sporting events out there? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, The Game. How'd you like to watch the Preds game in style? Make sure you're tuning in later on in the show as we reveal a keyword for you to text into the game line at 615-737-1025 for your chance to win the T-Mobile Hockey Homegate. It's your chance to watch a weekend Preds game with a Dos Equis prize pack, which includes a case of beer, dessert from Nothing But Cakes, a T-Mobile prize pack, and food provided by 312 Pizza Company in Germantown. You must be 21 or older to enter, and we'll have that opportunity coming up for you a little bit later in the show. Also, make sure you're tuning in the 8 o'clock hour as well. We'll have a cue to call for your chance to win a pair of tickets to tomorrow night's game for the Predators against the Carolina Hurricanes. So all that coming up later on in the show as well. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, discussing March Madness, now that March has officially arrived, tournament time right around the corner. And look, we all love filling out our brackets and love watching the tournament will come college basketball time here this month. As you said earlier in the show, one of the great months on the sports calendar. So let me start by asking you, Joe Rexroad, where does March Madness rank for you in terms of the best sporting events of the year?
Well, I've called it our best sporting event. And I believe that in terms of, you know, there's different kinds of postseasons. Like, you know, it's like, what's the hardest thing to win, right? Like, and I would say, I think you could make a strong case for when you think about the physicality involved and just how long it takes, how many wins it takes. I think the Stanley Cup has a good case because the grueling run to get that, I think, is unmatched. You know, I mean, in football, you have to win a couple of games to get the Super Bowl. You know, in hockey, that's a grind. And obviously, most people would call the greatest event the Super Bowl. I mean, it's the most watched thing, that's for sure. And, you know, it's the ultimate of our most popular sport. But I think this is the best event. I think this is the best sporting event. It's 3 weeks. It captures everyone, which is kind of like the Super Bowl, because a lot of people watch Super Bowl for the commercials, the halftime or whatever. Like, everybody sure. Watches the Super Bowl. Like, you – doesn't matter if you don't like sports at all. You probably still watch the Super Bowl or you're in a room with it on. And the same thing with this. And the thing about this sport that's interesting in this event is that it turns I don't know if niche sport is, maybe that it's a little bit dismissive of college basketball. But, you know, the popularity of college basketball is well behind the very top sports in our country. But this event brings everyone. And a lot of that is the bracket. But the games themselves, it's just an incredible combination of pressure on these high seeds and just opportunity for the low seeds. And I've just been in those buildings so many times covering this event where like impossible stuff happens and the whole building feels it, including, when I covered Middle Tennessee beating Michigan State 5 years ago, just the whole building, goes against the favorite. And it's just this incredible emotional wave that you can't overcome. So I think it is the greatest event. 3 weeks of all of us being totally submerged in this sport, and a lot of people who normally don't pay any attention to it.
Yeah, like for me, as you know, Joe, like I'm not a huge college basketball guy. I'm more of an NBA guy when it comes to basketball. But the unpredictability of the tournament, to me, is awesome. Like, I think the NBA at times is a little too much the other way, where it's just straight chalk all the way to the NBA Finals. And I think, I can appreciate that to some degree because generally you've got the best teams either competing for it or winning it. But also, like, just with the bracket and all the different things that can happen in the NCAA tournament and how unpredictable it is, I love that part of it. Now, would I consider it the best sporting event? Like, no. I mean, selfishly, I still love the Stanley Cup playoffs. I think they're great. The NFL playoffs, to me, are great, too. So I would probably lean those two just based on my own personal feelings. But I do, as somebody who likes college basketball, probably doesn't love college basketball, the tournament is a time that I'm absolutely invested and I'm paying attention, and I'll watch multiple games per day. Like, it's not like I'm just hanging out watching the Tennessee game at that point.
Yeah, and also I think this is where I've heard this debate, these two things, like this is the toughest championship to win. And again, I would argue the Stanley Cup is the toughest. But I would say that this is really close in a very different way because of the name. Like, again, if this was like the NBA playoffs and all of these teams played 7-game series, well, we'd probably get chalk every year, right? I mean, Virginia doesn't lose to UMBC 4 times or 3 times out of 5. They'll have the one stinker and then they'll blow them out every other time. So that's where this event, because it's just the one and done, I think it's very difficult to count on any team winning it. Gonzaga's undefeated. They're going to be undefeated going into this thing. But, boy, just one night where you aren't quite hitting your shots and the other team is pulling, 25-footers out of the hat, and you're done. And that's where I think it's tougher in terms of great teams often fall short. Teams that would have been the champion if they played series fall short because of that, of the nature of the event. Now, of course, it's interesting in hockey. There's still a lot of big upsets, even in the 7-game series. But I love the drama and the unpredictability, and just, it's also like every year there's like some, guard from George Mason or VCU or something who becomes like a little mini celebrity for a couple weeks, which I love that. And just the fact that, that some of these schools, again, there's one, George Mason to the Final Four, VCU, we've had these crazy runs, Loyola a couple years ago, that really make it, I think, just special and just, it's just different from any of the other events.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark from Clarksville texts in, says, March Madness is the number one sporting event. From filling out brackets to seeing the upsets every year, it's an excitement that can't be matched in any other sport. A close second for me is the World Cup, and then the Olympics are third.
Good choices. Very good choices. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to count the Olympics all like it just is, one thing, but that's awfully strong. Another thing I would say, it's March Madness starts this week. So I think the conference tournaments can be great too. Sometimes there's not as much on the line, but in a lot of cases it's teams fighting for bids. Obviously in the smaller leagues, that's what it's all about. And so I think you combine those with the tournament and it's an incredible month. By the way, Belmont, Wednesday night. I did not realize they have to play Wednesday against SIUE with Nick Mazinski supposed to be back, but they've lost two straight without him. We'll see how healthy he is. But that's tough kind of for them that they have to play Wednesday. If they win, they should handle that game, but then they'll be back Friday in the semis and Saturday would be the title game. So it looks like they're in the case now, even though it's a tough break to lose Mazinski. I think they're probably you earn the bid or you are not in this tournament. So there's a lot of pressure on Belmont this week.
Joe, you bring up conference tournaments, and I always thought that the old Big East tournament was always sometimes even better than some NCAA tournament games. Like that tournament at the Garden was always very special, and I hate that the realignment all from football has robbed us of that Big East tournament. Always, that was always must-see TV. For me, I don't think March Madness as a whole is in my top two or three, but I will say the first 4 days of the tournament are as exhilarating of a four-day period in all of sports. When you are basically going from 64 to 16 teams all in a span of, 72, 96 hours? And it's, you've got buzzer beaters, you've got upsets, you've got Cinderellas. It's that 4 day period is always something to behold.
Yeah, and I think the best round is probably the round of 32, like the second round. You know, that's where, you know, it's tons of games still all day long, Saturday and Sunday, and they're all good, you know. Like, it's so much basketball. Like, because obviously some of the 16-1 games and 15-2 games get out of hand. You know, you do end up with more than not or blowouts. But you get to the second round, and it's just – the second round of the Sweet 16 to me are, you know, it's like massively good games and a ton of them, quantity and quality.
Kyle on Twitter says that the March Madness is in the top five for sure in terms of the best sporting events of the year. Jamie on Twitter says it does not register with her. Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andrew texts in and says, "It's low. I've never been a fan of basketball, but I don't discount its validity as a sport like I do baseball or golf." Andrew, not very good with baseball or golf.
Baseball's not a sport.
That's what Andrew said.
Okay, Andrew.
Andrew's like, bowling, and that's it. Everybody else, get out of here. See some Pete Weber highlights.
Oh, 9-year anniversary the other day of him rolling that strike, by the way. Gary Thorne on the call. What a great moment.
Yeah, you should retweet that again.
You really narrowed it down with all the strikes that he's rolled.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about with Pete Weber, the bowler. You know him from one thing. It's not from his illustrious bowling career. I can promise you that. When we come back, we'll switch gears. Our man Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Titans and also get his thoughts on the Preds as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the wholesaling studio powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.